Donate at WJFFradio.org.
Former President Trump is in real legal trouble, facing multiple serious criminal charges, all while he runs for president again. I'm Scott Detrow. Each week on All Things Considered, we dive into the latest courtroom drama and consider the stakes for American democracy. Catch up with us every Saturday or listen to the Trump's Trials podcast from NPR. And stay with this NPR station for breaking updates and analysis.
Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. My guest today is filmmaker straight out of Wayne County, Pennsylvania, Alex Hankoff. Alex has been on the show before, but he's been doing some pretty interesting things, and I wanted him to share what he's been up to with you. Talking about his trip out west and the work he did on a cattle ranch. It was quite an adventure getting to Montana, and Alex is going to cover that as well. Then Alex went to Ireland, location scouting for a movie project he's doing. Lots of miles to cross, so let's get started. Welcome to Catskill Character, Alex.
I'm flattered to be back. Thanks, Donna.
I'm probably going to ask you to come back yet again because you're always on the move and you're always doing such interesting things. And I love sharing your travels with the listener.
Listen, I appreciate it. And I will try to continue creating exciting little episodes for you.
Okay. Just for me and my listeners.
I'm out there all for you.
Okay. You know what I wanted to ask you? You know, we know we're going out west, but what was the original impetus for you going out west again?
So I decided to drive out to a job that was shooting out west instead of fly out, just so that I could bring my dog and all of my film equipment without stressing about it being lost in the luggage, and brought a very dear friend of mine with me. And he ended up getting hired on the job whilst in the process of us driving out. So that was
a blast. That's cool.
Yeah.
So this was at Intel.
Yeah, we were making an ad for Intel, their manufacturing plant that does microchips in Arizona and Phoenix.
Before we get into that experience, you went with your friend, Jeremy, and you also brought your dog, Lobo, and you stopped along the way in a lot of different places.
On this trip out to Phoenix, I decided to hit a bunch of fun spots along the way, especially since Jeremy was with me and he'd never been to any of these places. He had never done a cross-country trip. He's from Alaska originally, and that was one of the reasons why I thought he'd have a great time.
You're always looking out for your friends, aren't you?
Hey, listen, you know, I mean, if I can be a good guide for somebody's first experience across the United States, then, you know, I'll take that responsibility.
All right, well, let's start with Shenandoah National Park. It's really amazing, right?
Shenandoah National Park was the first Eastern National Park. And what's so great about it is, especially living where we do, it's really only about a 4-hour drive to get to the beginning of Shenandoah. And what's so special about Shenandoah is the road that cuts through the national park is just incredible and so picturesque. And it rides along different ridges and peaks and valleys all through the Shenandoah Valley and surrounding mountains. And basically, they developed that national park because there were so many big, beautiful national parks out west that folks on the East Coast were all traveling to Europe and all of these different places abroad. And the National Park Service decided to start designating areas on the East Coast as national parks, and Shenandoah was the first. And they built an incredible road that drives all along, you know, this picturesque wilderness. And it's called Skyline Drive. And it's
right.
just one of the best drives that you can do in the States. And so, you know, always like hitting that as sort of the kickoff to going out west. It's really, really stunning in the fall, too. Mm. You get these sort of tunnels of foliage as you're driving along those beautiful roadways. It's really something to check out.
The park starts somewhere around Bristol, Virginia.
I love Bristol because Bristol is the birthplace of country music. There's a great museum there in Bristol. Jimmy Rogers' guitar is in that museum. I was kind of taken by surprise, actually, when we went and saw that. Yeah, Bristol's cool, and it's right on the border of Virginia and Tennessee. So Bristol claims both states. It's just a fun town. I mean, if you love music and history, I highly recommend it.
Where'd you go next?
We continued on to Fort Worth, Texas, which is one of my favorite towns. They've got a historic downtown called the Stockyards. What I love about the Stockyards is it's just like walking onto a movie set. You got people either who are real cowboys or cosplaying as cowboys and cowgirls walking around everywhere. They march these longhorn cows up and down the street twice a day, every day, all year round except for Christmas.
What's the purpose of that? Is that just a visual thing, or are they doing something
with it? It's kind of embracing, you know, the cultural heritage, right?
Okay. Like
they're trying to communicate what that original downtown Stockyards environment was like. I wouldn't call it like a full reenactment kind of town. It's not Tombstone, Arizona, which is something more like that. Stockyards in Fort Worth is a cool, swanky, historic downtown, but they're hanging on to their roots. And it's also got this giant rodeo venue called the Cowboy Coliseum, which is fantastic too. I mean, Stockyards, Fort Worth is just a blast. And we were actually doing a photo shoot the entire time on this road trip because Jeremy is a model. And so, you know, dressed him up in a bunch of clothes, and we got a really beautiful photo shoot out of it. And the Stockyards is a hell of a backdrop.
Well, it sounds like a party.
Oh, it's a party, all right. That town is that town is wild. It's got honky tonks and steakhouses, and you can get into a lot of trouble in that town.
Yeah, I get the picture. Well, Tucson, isn't there a national park outside of Tucson?
Yeah, so Saguaro National Park is right outside Tucson, and I was introduced to Saguaro National Park on a shoot years ago, and it's just one of my favorite places to go. I've got really good luck when it comes to showing up in national parks. I always get there sort of at sundown, and I think that that's because we're always driving all day, and you always kind of end up at the national park as a destination towards the end of the day because this country is huge and it takes forever to get anywhere. And so we landed in Saguaro at sundown, and the sky was on fire in pinks and oranges and purples, and it was just outstanding to see that gorgeous western sky with those, you know, silhouettes of the Saguaro cactuses towering so massive. You know, some of them can be 20 feet tall.
Wow.
It was really special. Yeah, so got to watch the sun go down in Saguaro National Park, and then continue on into Tucson, where we hung out at the Hotel Congress, which is one of the historic landmarks in Tucson, where Dillinger was shot or captured, something like that. It's a real raucous, wild hotel, and I forgot how crazy it got in there. We had to sleep with earplugs in because there's a rock bar downstairs that didn't stop till like 5 a.m. So
wow,
that's a pretty cool town too.
You know, I don't know if you know this, but that's the area that Linda Ronstadt's family is from. And she wrote this book with a man named Lawrence Downs called Feels Like Home. And it combines recipes from the Sonoran Desert and a road trip through the place her family called home. It's very cool. I have to get that book. I gave it away as a gift, and I have to get one for myself. But the food is just phenomenal.
That sounds fantastic. Yeah, I mean, that some of the food in that part of the country is just the best you can get, right? I mean, those Mexican influences and all those flavors, that's incredible. I got to check that out.
Yeah. So after that, you rolled up to Phoenix, which was your original destination, and that's where you did the Intel commercial. So let's talk a bit about that now.
So yeah, after all of those fun stops along the way, we finally landed in Phoenix, and I think that the heat was 108, I believe. really, really impressive. So I was glad to be shooting somewhere with air conditioning. We got to Phoenix and did the commercial at the Intel microprocessors plant, which was incredible to see. It is very futuristic in there. There's robots all over the place. And you got to walk around in a Tyvek clean suit so as not to shed dust or dander in this highly sensitive, incredible microprocessing plant.
Wow.
So that was really, really interesting. And it's just incredible to know that that kind of technology is happening all the time, 24/7, 365 in that giant facility. You know, you don't know these things until you witness them in firsthand, and it's just mind-boggling what's going on.
So you finished there, but of course you didn't just pick up and go home when your job was done. And I'm really interested for you to talk to the listener about Montana and how you ended up on a cattle ranch and why.
Well, when you're out west, Donna, you end up finding yourself in all kinds of situations, right? So the way I found myself on Wanda Wilcox's ranch was Jeremy and I had wrapped up our Intel job, which went really well. And I wanted to introduce him to Utah because my philosophy is when you're on the road, you're always so close to the next thing. Like when I'm in Arizona, I'm so close to Utah that why aren't we going to Utah? And then when you're in Utah, you're so close to Colorado that you might as well pop over to Colorado. So that's kind of my thought process when it comes to travel in general. It's like, when you find yourself in a situation, like what can you do in the surrounding area that's going to leave an impact and you know, create memories and stories for yourself? So when we left Arizona, I decided to go up to Utah to show Jeremy what Utah was like, because that's where my family's from. And it's very special to me. And he had never been out west before. And, you know, Phoenix ain't it. Right. Like if you're gone all the way out there, you need to see something spectacular. And so I brought Jeremy up to Bryce Canyon in Utah, which is one of my favorite places. It's also one of my mother's favorite places. You know, again, we got to Bryce Canyon right in time for the sunset, and we watched the gradients of color shift over those incredible orange and red rocks. And it was just so magical. And so, you know, sharing that with Jeremy was a blast. Then I dropped him off at the airport a couple days later. And again, kind of just thinking about the fact that I'm out west and what can I do to kind of maximize my experience, I decided to drive up to Yellowstone National Park and go see Yellowstone again. I ended up getting to Yellowstone on the same exact day as I had been there the year before, which was sort of strange.
That's weird.
the gravity of that place keeps bringing me back. And I'm kind of a national parks nerd, and I've got this book, the National Parks Passport, where if you go to all the different national parks in the visitor centers, there's these little rubber stamps that have the date on them, and you stamp the passport. And you can see where you've been and when you've been there. And so, you know, went in to stamp my passport book for Yellowstone and realized that I'd been there the exact same day a year prior. So that was kind of funny.
Wow.
But yeah, so did Yellowstone for a minute and then decided to kind of explore a little bit more of Montana because I hadn't really been around Montana in a while. And while I was up there, the thought occurred to me to see if I could volunteer my labor on a cattle ranch because there's lots of cattle ranches up there and they need hands. And so I found Wanda Wilcox and gave her a buzz, and she set me up on a ranch, and I stayed in a tiny little wood burning stove, single room micro cabin that they had dragged down off the mountain on her property. It's like an old homesteader's cabin from the 1800s that they had like reconstructed and put on her property there. So she set me up in this tiny little cabin in the horse corral, And Lobo's never been happier. He had all kinds of critters and horses to chase. He was having a blast.
What did you do on this cattle ranch?
So on the cattle ranch, every day there's a million things to do. It's crazy. And Wanda's fifth generation on this ranch. You know, obviously things have changed a lot since the heyday of migrant workers working on cattle ranches and, you know, just all of that kind of lifestyle where you used to be able to find folks to work on your ranch because you didn't have to pay health insurance and there wasn't all this like legal documentation and all this stuff. Back in the 1800s and early 1900s, you know, it's like people would just travel around the West as ranch hands with their families and they'd get put up for a season and, you know, that'd be it. And then they'd move on. So the way that these ranches had grown and gotten so huge was because of how much cheap available labor there was. That's not the case anymore, right? Everybody who would have been sort of like a migrant worker doing that kind of skilled labor nowadays is doing desk jobs and all kinds of modern day work, right? So what's interesting is all of these ranches now, they're massive and they don't have anybody to help. And so on any given day, there's a million things to do. You got to fix a fence, you know, maybe a fence post broke, or you've got to fix up some barbed wire. You know, there's the sheep get out. So we had to go corral the sheep, you know, they got out of the fence one of the days I was there. We ended up helping out a neighbor whose cows way, way up on the mountain ended up getting lost. And so she was really old. She was in her late 80s. And so we ended up helping her out and we got on horses and ended up finding 20 head of cattle up on the mountain, you know? So there's a million things going on. Plus it was the fall. So we're getting ready for winter because winter shows up in Montana and, you know, in late October. So just lots of preparation happening. And, you know, Wanda doesn't really have a whole lot of hands. So what she does is she'll have tourists come and work on her ranch. And I say work in air quotes because, I mean, basically the tourists aren't doing anything. They're there and they're going on horseback rides and stuff like that, but they're not actually getting their hands dirty and fixing stuff like we were. But, you know, at least that offers a little bit of help from time to time. But yeah, I mean, you know, I just tried to do what I could to help Wanda out because I could just see that there wasn't a whole lot of support, you know, and as an empathetic human and yeah, also just like the romance of the whole thing, I was just like, man, how can I help? How can I make this place a little bit better for while I'm here? You know?
Yeah.
But yeah. So anyway, there's a lot going on that ranch day in and day out. And Wanda is a very incredible badass woman who has been running this place, you know, her entire life. And watching her get things done and, you know, understanding what that land needs and supporting her through that was incredible. I mean, it was a highlight of last year in general for me.
She needs a GoFundMe or something like that.
I mean, I think that it would be beneficial. I also don't think that Wanda's the kind of woman that asks for handouts though.
Yeah. Doesn't sound like it.
Yeah. So it seems like it just kind of is what it is. And I think that that lifestyle is always a struggle and it's always tough, but you know, there's a hell of a lot of grit in the folks that live that lifestyle, you know, and they always kind of end up finding a way to get through. And that's, I'm in awe of what she can do with those hundreds of thousands of acres all by herself, you know, with very, very little support. And it's pretty incredible.
It's amazing how we sometimes romanticize things that we really don't know anything about, but the reality is so much starker than we think. You know, we think about these beautiful ranches out there. And then as you're talking, I'm wondering what's going to happen to them. You know, eventually Wanda and the 80-year-old woman next door, they're not going to be able to do this anymore. Anyway, it makes me sad to hear that. But let's take a break here, Alex, and we'll come right back, okay?
Sounds good.
You've been listening to my conversation with today's guest on Catskill Character, Alex Hancock. I'm Donna Fellenberg, and we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more from Alex.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio,
we decided to ask a very simple question, which is, would you prefer to live in a world with or without TikTok or Instagram?
Is social media a trap that most of us wish we could get out of?
Obviously, with cigarettes, there's a clear physiological component to the addiction. Now, with social media, there could be as well.
That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tuesday at 1 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
Actor David Alan Grier is staying booked and busy these days.
You know, I'm 67 years old, and I really did not think when I was much younger that this would be my most prolific period.
From In Living Color to The Color Purple and a new film, The American Society of Magical Negroes. I'm Kai Wright, and next time on Notes from America, David Alan Grier joins me to talk about returning to his dramatic roots. Sunday evening at 6, live on Radio Catskill.
I'm Donna Fellenberg, host of Catskill Character here on WJFF Radio Catskill. And today I've been speaking with Wayne County, Pennsylvania resident, filmmaker Alex Hankoff. In the first half of the show, Alex took us on a trip out west where he was traveling for work. We went to Shenandoah National Park in Bristol, Virginia, with Alex as our guide. Then we hit Fort Worth, Texas, and Tucson and Phoenix, Arizona. He also shared his experience working on a cattle ranch in Montana. In the second half of the show, Alex will tell us about his trip to Ireland, where he was scouting locations for a film project. Let's go. Alex, first of all, thank you so much for that trip out west. It was incredible.
Yeah, well, I sent you a postcard from out there.
Yes, you did. I was very happy to get that. So now we're going to Ireland. What area in Ireland did you scout, and what can you tell us about it?
Over this most recent winter, I went out to Ireland and visited an area called Clifton, which is out in the west. And it's the ancestral home of one of my dear friends, Danny Morris. And he had been telling me stories about Clifton for years and years, and it inspired a idea that I'd been sort of developing now for a little while. And so I finally got to get my boots on the ground out there and see it for myself.
You probably know this, but I don't know if the listener knows that in 1919, the first nonstop transatlantic flight took off from St. John's, Newfoundland, and landed just under 16 hours later in Clifton in County Galway. Pretty cool.
Yeah, that's incredible. I think it's probably because it's, you know, it's the first landmass that you hit right after that giant ocean. So
yeah,
those pilots were lucky that it's there.
And the weather there is really challenging, right?
The weather is dreary, to say the least, which is what I need for the story. So it worked out. You know, if I had gotten out there and it had been sunny and beautiful, I would have been disappointed. But I got to say that the west of Ireland does not disappoint when it comes to atmosphere and mood. That's for sure.
You know, getting a movie, as far as I know, and let me just say, I know very little, but it's not an easy thing to do to get it made. Right, Alex? So maybe you could take the listener through the steps of what it takes to get a movie from its inception, you know, and to the screen.
You know, we're still in the development process on this particular project. But, you know, I mean, what it takes is you envision a story, you end up writing a script. That takes quite a long time just to kind of get it into a good place. And you're constantly, you know, editing and adjusting that as you go. And then you need to find partners in order to help fund it, you know, unless you can fund it on your own. And so the purpose of this Ireland visit was to, number one, make sure that the environments that I was speaking to in the screenplay that we were developing felt authentic, which they do, but just wanted to, you know, get a more of a realistic picture of what that world felt like while I was there, as opposed to doing research and, you know, looking at Google images and this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So there was that. But then another big reason why I went out there was to talk to local production companies and local development execs and that sort of thing about kicking this project off. So did a little time in Dublin just to meet some folks and talk to them about the project and show them sort of the proof of concept film that I had put together.
And what is a proof of concept film?
So I'm a director and cinematographer, and the benefit of that is that, you know, I can just kind of go out and shoot stuff as opposed to having to hire a whole crew and everything.
Ah.
So for this project, we shot the first three pages of the script just to package that with the script to show folks who might be interested in bringing it on and developing it, kind of what the tonality feels like, what the mood is. As well as sort of like that first opening sequence is kind of like a shocking cold open. And so that was a nice, easy little sequence to shoot because it tells a quick little story and you kind of get the gist of what the premise is right away.
Do you ever think about doing a film at your house?
I've thought about it. I've been thinking about it a lot more recently, actually, just because it's such a great location and it's here, you know. You know, the Catskills has its own vibe, that's for sure, you know. I know that my good buddy Josh Rubin, who is a Catskills local as well, he lives out in Los Angeles now, but he made his film up here called Scare Me. Yeah, so the Catskills, it's a spooky spot. No kid, no doubt about it. I'm a big advocate for doing what you can with what you have and filming in your own backyard, so to speak, in this sense, literally. But I don't have any scripts that play into the Catskills lore just yet. You know, that's why we've got this werewolf thing happening in Ireland. But I might have to imagine something for the local environment as well.
Well, if you ever do that, I want to be an extra.
You got it. You'll be more than an extra. We'll give you a leading role.
And maybe I'll be like, you know, a TV news person that comes up to your house because there's a big crime that happens up there. And I'll be on the spot interviewing people.
There you go. Well, now you're a writer.
Well, it's been a lot of fun talking to you as always, Alex. Thank you so much for coming in again.
Oh, well, thanks, Donna. I really appreciate you having me. It's always so nice chatting with you about what I've been up to.
Yes, and as I said, I'm going to probably have you back after your next adventure. So thank you so much. This has been Catskill Character with today's guest, filmmaker and adventurer Alex Hancock. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 10:30, except the last Saturday of the month when Greg Triggs brings us Travels with Triggs. Be sure to join us then for more stories from fascinating characters of the Catskills and beyond. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. Thanks so much for listening.
Radio Catskill supporters include the Sterling Business and Technology Park, located at Exit 17 on Interstate 84 in Northeast Pennsylvania, offering opportunities to locate or expand businesses on property zoned for manufacturing and other uses. More information at sterlingbusinesspark.com. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
There's always a story behind the music, how the song was written, why the song was written. I'm Kathy Geary. Join me for Now and Then. Now and Then, Saturday afternoons at 3 on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
The world's bursting with British and Irish singers and players and bands, and it's inevitable. In well over 400 editions of the Waggerloader Monkeys, some get overlooked. So next time on the Waggerloader Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill, I'll bring you the unjustly overlooked. Join me, please, on Sunday afternoon at 3.
WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello. This is Radio Catskill. Public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Listen local.